Again, good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members. Presenting the annual report for 2008-2009 for the National Department of Health.
Sorry, we can dim the light now.
The structure of the presentation will fall under the following headings, and all of these are from the annual report. The vision and the mission of the department for that particular period, 08-09, the legislative mandate that the department was functioning under, our 10-point plan for that period, the health system priorities, and then we go on to a summary of performance on the strategic plan per budget program. We look at the background to the budget and the expenditure that was incurred during the financial year, the appropriations, excluding the conditional grant, the actual expenditure, again excluding the conditional grant, and then a summary of reasons for under expenditure, which includes the conditional grant. And on the second page, an expenditure per economic classification, we look at the provincial expenditure on the conditional grant at the end of the financial year, how we utilize donor funds, what our trade and public entities did during that period, and then looked at the financial statements, and we closed by looking at the priorities for 2009 to 2014, which is the mandate of the new administration post the April elections, and then we make some concluding remarks. With respect to the vision and the mission, the vision is an accessible, caring, and high-quality health system, and clearly this reflects not just on the public health system, but reflects on the private health system as well. The mission of the department is to improve health status through prevention of illness and disease and through the promotion of healthy lifestyles, and to consistently improve the healthcare delivery system by focusing on access, equity, efficiency, quality, and sustainability. There's a long list of pieces of legislation, both from the Department of Health and from government more broadly, that informs the way in which the department functions, and we've picked out just a few to highlight some of them. One is the Constitution of the Republic, obviously the highest mandate that we can have. Second is the National Health Act of 2003, the Public Finance Management Act of 1999, the Nursing Act of 2005, Medical Schemes Act of 1998, and the Tobacco Control Product Control Amendment Act. And clearly, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, this is not an exhaustive list, it's just to signal some of the types of legislation that guide the department's functioning. In terms of the priorities for 2008 and 2009, there were 10 of them, and these are strengthening health programs, development and implementation of health facility improvement plans, development of an integrated national health information system, strengthening the health financing, including the introduction of the national health insurance system, achieving further reductions in the prices of medicines and pharmaceutical products, strengthening human resources for health, strengthening health, international health relations, and improving management and communication. I said there were 10, there's actually 8. Moving on to the summary of the performance of the department for the period that we're reporting under. Again, we'll do this budget program by budget program, and the first is administration. And we just thought we will highlight some of the achievements and some of the continuing challenges with respect to each of the budget program areas from a non-financial point of view. So this part of the presentation focuses on non-financial performance. The administration of the department was strengthened in various ways in 2008-2009. We completed a 15-year review of the performance of the Department of Health. We did do a turnaround strategy to improve audit outcomes, which is an ongoing issue, and queries from the Auditor General were responded to within 10 days, in keeping with our own target for 2008-2009. The South African National AIDS Council received an unqualified audit opinion for 2008-2009. And we have tried to address all of the concerns of the Auditor General in the annual report for 2007-2008. However, despite the progress in these areas, a number of challenges still remain. And some of these are reflected in the 15-year review that we did that found weaknesses in the management and leadership of the health system at all levels of the system. And Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the challenges that we found were also reflected in other publications, notably the Lancet publication of August and September this year, And also the reviews that have been done of the health system by various UN agencies, including the WHO. We also found that there's been a weakness in the way in which the primary healthcare system and the district health system has been functioning, and the health information system is still not optimal. So those are some of the key findings of this 15-year review. The National Department received a qualified audit opinion on the basis of two issues for the period that we are reporting under, and these were a lack of reconciliation from pharmaceutical companies on the fees that were received by the Medicines Control Council, and secondly that our national fleet PPP suffered some difficulties with respect to reconciliation again of payments for the use of vehicles. So those are the two areas that the Auditor General gave us an audit opinion, a qualified audit opinion on in the 2007-08 financial year. The further achievements with respect to administration, we have strengthened health sector planning. All provinces had, honourable member, I must apologise up front for some of these acronyms that we have in here that may not be entirely self-evident, but I will actually speak to them as we go along. So the APPs, I think, are now well known. They're the annual performance plans that provinces have to develop in terms of legislation. The National Department was able to analyse all of the annual performance plans for the period 2008-2009 through to 2010-11, and written comments were provided to provinces. We were also, as the National Department, able to monitor the performance of the health system, the public health system in particular, using our quarterly reporting system. And these have been both produced, analyzed, and discussed by senior management in the department. A draft communication strategy for the department was produced to provide an avenue for interacting with and receiving feedback from stakeholders and to inform the public on key health issues. The ongoing challenges, the issuing, withdrawal, and reissuing of allocation letters for 2010-11 by National Treasury somewhat affected the completion of annual performance plans. Honourable Chair, just to say that what we've been trying to do is trying to get the planning process to lead the budgeting process, so people can say what it is they want to achieve, and then how the funding that is voted will be, that they request from either National, we request from National Treasury, or provinces request from provincial treasuries, can be used to meet the requirements of the province. And when you don't get allocation letters early enough, you can't finalize your plan. And that's really the point that we are making here. We should add, though, that despite these challenges, all plans were completed by March and April 2009. We would like to complete the plans much earlier, but at least we completed it somewhat before the beginning of the financial year. Program 2 is strategic health programs, and under strategic health programs, all of the health programs like maternal and child health, HIV and AIDS, TB, other communicable diseases and non-communicable diseases reside in terms of both the planning and the budgeting. And here again we highlight some of the achievements and some of the ongoing challenges. Some of the achievements was that we have produced a revised strategic plan for maternal, neonatal, child and women's health and nutrition for the period 2009 and 2014. We have yet to present this formally to the National Health Council and get the Minister and the MEC's endorsement of it. It might be opportune at some point, Honourable Chair, to present this to the committee, given the significant number of deaths we still experience on the maternal side and on the child and infant side. The national fully immunized coverage rate has increased from 85.2% in 2007-2008 to 88.8% in 2008-2009. However, there are still some ongoing challenges which I will come to. The WHO has a reach every district strategy, which includes a number of components, and we have asked all provinces to implement that strategy in all districts. And during the 2007-08 financial year, we had 30 in the 08-09 financial year, we had targeted that 30 districts of the 52 health districts we have in the country would use this approach. And we are quite happy to say that this we've exceeded the target and 44 districts implemented it. We had no measles outbreak in 08-09, and no death from measles in that period. However, I think it's now been well reported that we had reports of measles outbreaks in Gauteng province and a few cases, isolated cases in a number of other provinces in this financial year. Over 734,000 people living with debilitating conditions have been provided with nutritional supplements. This exceeded the target that we had of 500,000 people. And these are typically people with chronic diseases, including TB in some instances and HIV and AIDS. We have had reports from the Saving Mothers, the Confidential Inquiries Committee, over three triennial periods to date, the last one being for the period 2005 to 2007. And for each of the reporting periods, we've been trying to implement the recommendations of the committee and trying to monitor the implementation of the recommendation of the Confidential Inquiries Committee. But there are ongoing challenges with the way in which that is being reported. In terms of some of the challenges, we still have a number of districts which have immunization coverage rates of less than 80%. Our target is 90% for all. We had 27 of the 52 districts with measles coverage of less than the target. We have been monitoring the implementation of the Saving Mothers report, as I suggested, but this is not as easy as we thought it would be, and we are in consultation with our various stakeholders and our development partners to try and figure out how to do this in a more rigorous way. 53% of our health institutions, public health institutions, conduct monthly mortality and morbidity meetings. However, this is against the target of 70%. So we are still not reaching our own targets on the number of institutions that hold monthly morbidity and mortality meetings. However, it is up from the previous year, the 07-08 year, where we had 45% of facilities reporting holding monthly meetings. Continuing on the achievement, the South African National AIDS Council has been restructured, and the secretariat has been strengthened. As I think honourable members know, the SANAC is our lead agent, which coordinates all sectors of society, government and civil society, in our response and implementation of the National Strategic Plan for HIV 07 to 2011. And a large number of SANAC meetings were held during this period. HIV prevention efforts were strengthened with over 4 million female condoms distributed, which exceeded our target of 3.5 million. I must say on the male condom side, we had distributed significantly less than we intended, and these were due to significant delays in awarding a new tender for the full condom in October, male condoms in October last year. We have a very good coverage of VCT in terms of provision of VCT. 93% of our public health facilities offer voluntary counselling and testing, and over 95% offer prevention of mother-to-child transmission services. The number of patients on antiretroviral treatment has increased fairly significantly. By the end of April this year, we had more than 780,000 patients on treatment, compared to 483,000 patients by the end of April 2007. So this reflects a more than 38% increase in access to antiretrovirals. Just for information of honourable members, we are projecting that by the end of this financial year, we should have more than 990,000 patients on antiretrovirals. So it's a significantly big program. Just by comparison, India, with 1.3 billion people, but a lower prevalence rate of, as a given, had at the end of the same period, end of April, about 330,000 patients in treatment. So, you know, when we say we have the largest treatment program in the world, that is true, But perhaps that's not something to be too proud of, because it shows the extent of the HIV challenges we have. In terms of the WHO recommendation for the analysis of TB data, there's always a lag in reporting TB outcomes, TB treatment outcomes. The TB cure rate for 2007 was 64%, which was higher than the figure for 2006, which was 57.7%. Now, having said that, even though there's an improvement being shown, our target, the world's target, the WHO target for cure rates is 85%, so we're significantly below the international benchmark for cure rates. Honourable members will recall that 3 years ago we had identified four districts as crisis districts for TB, which had the highest number of cases of TB, the highest caseload. And these were Amatola and Nelson Mandela in Eastern Cape, the city of Joburg, Gauteng, and Ekurhuleni in Durban. Of these four, the city of Joburg performed the best in terms of the ability to get as close as possible to the target that they set themselves in terms of cure rates. The other three are still struggling to achieve that, their own targets. There's some good news. Besides the improvement in the cure rate, the TB defaulter rate has decreased from 10% in 2006 to 7% in 2007, which was the target we had set. In terms of challenges, as I suggested, we didn't distribute as many condoms as we had hoped because of supply problems. We are still screening far fewer HIV-positive patients for TB. We are screening about 45% of those patients against a target of 60%. And as I suggested, the cure rates in Amatola, Ekurhuleni, and Nelson Mandela are still lower than, they're much better than when we started the program 3 years ago. Most of them were in the 30%. So they're much higher than they were, but they're still not at the target that we had set. Honourable members may remember that the Minister released the 2008 antenatal and syphilis survey results for HIV. And this reflects the stability in HIV prevalence amongst 15 to 24-year-olds from 22.4% in 2006 down to 22.1% in 2007, and then a further reduction of 20 to 21.7% in 2008. This could suggest that our health promotion messages are reaching young South Africans. Syphilis prevalence amongst antenatal clients again has shown a decrease from 2.8% in 2007 to 1.9% in 2008. We have a large number of TB patients agreeing to test for HIV. The challenge, as I suggested previously, was to test HIV patients for TB, and that's where we're not doing as well. But on the TB side, we're doing relatively better. 73.8% of TB patients were tested for HIV, exceeding our own target of 60%. We are continuing to do well on malaria, and it suggests that this is one area where we will meet the MDG target by 2015. The goalpost has changed now, as honourable members may know, with respect to malaria. We are now trying to get malaria eradication, elimination of malaria, rather than just control of malaria. We had almost 30% reduction in cases between 07, 08, and 08, 09. And the total number of cases decreased from 8,743 in 07, 08 to 6,167. Case fatality, the number of patients that died from malaria, decreased from 0.8% in 2007-08 to 0.6% in 2008-2009. I must say that our benchmark for malaria case fatality is 0.5%, so we've not quite reached 0.5% yet, but we're fairly close. Continuing challenges, as the antenatal survey results for 2008 reflects, the HIV prevalence, the national HIV prevalence on average is still high at 29.3%, but it seems to be showing a stabilization. Honourable Chair, what we are trying to figure out is what the stabilization means. Does it mean a decrease in new infection, or does it mean that people are living longer, or is there a combination of those two? People might well be living longer because of the high number of patients that are now on antiretrovirals, but we're trying to figure that out. What is disturbing, which is not on the slide, is that there are four districts in the country that have more than 40% prevalence rate. They are in the following order, from highest to lowest, to 40%. Umgungundlovu, which is the area around Pietermaritzburg in KwaZulu-Natal. The Ugu district, which is the Port Shepstone area of KwaZulu-Natal. The Thekwini district, which is the Durban area. And Gert Sibande in Mpumalanga, which is the Witbank area. So those are areas of high prevalence that we clearly need additional efforts on both the prevention side and the treatment and care side, and we are busy looking at what else we need to do in those areas. In terms of access to public facilities, Honorable Bemis may recall that in terms of access by people with disabilities to our health facilities, we are trying to ensure that all new health facilities have easy access for people with disabilities. But we've been trying to monitor this and to look at the extent to which we have made improvements in access for people with disabilities. And we had some difficulty in terms of trying to get a service provider to do the analysis. But we've been doing a kind of ad hoc surveillance through the provinces. But we've not managed to do a national survey of accessibility. We have guidelines for the management of non-communicable diseases at primary healthcare facilities. These have been disseminated to all provinces, and we've been assisting as a national department 5 provinces to implement these. I might say, Honorable Chairperson, that even as we talk about communicable diseases, the percentage of non-communicable diseases that are being contributed to the total burden of disease is increasing quite sharply. So it's hypertension, diabetes, cardiovascular diseases. And of course, we have a growing number of people dying and being injured through violence, interpersonal violence, and motor vehicle accidents, and the like. With respect to people with disabilities, we have been trying to change the guidelines for access to free health services. As you know, 4 years ago, we had introduced free health services for people with disabilities. And we are in the process of also ensuring that in terms of the Mental Health Care Act, the facilities that are fully equipped to provide the 72-hour assessment program for people with mental illnesses, that all our facilities are geared up to doing that. Now, 63% of our hospitals currently are equipped to provide the 72-hour assessment, still 7% short of our target. We had set a cataract surgery rate of 1,237 people having a cataract surgery per million population for 2008-2009. So we had set a target of 1,600 people per million people, but we received 1,200. We did 1,237. And the consequence of this is really not having enough ophthalmic surgeons to perform cataract surgery. So we are looking at training other people to do cataract surgeries, like is done in many other countries in the world, and we are working with all of the eye care people in the country, universities and the public and the private sector, to look at how we can reach our target of 1,600 people per million. We had set a target of waiting times for wheelchairs for people who qualify at 6 weeks. Currently, the average waiting time is 8 weeks. So clearly, we need to improve our capacity to respond to requests for wheelchairs or eligibility for wheelchairs. The next budget program is health planning and monitoring. And again, we do the same in terms of achievements and some of the challenges. In terms of the planning, we have the comprehensive HIV and AIDS care management and treatment plan. Honorable Chair, this was introduced in 2004, and it's really under this program that the large numbers of patients that are now on ARVs are planned for. The branch responsible for health planning and monitoring compiles and disseminates statistics to focus on health outcomes, quality of care issues to all provinces periodically. And we also have been providing reports to the South African National AIDS Council. The National Department held a National Quality of Care Colloquium in November last year as a way to kickstart our big push towards improving quality of care in the health system, both public and private. And this was attended by stakeholders from, this was really well attended. I think there must have been about 200 people at the colloquium, at which a fair number of decisions were made about how to strengthen quality of care nationally. We've produced national norms and standards for health facilities, and 27 hospitals were then assessed against these norms and standards, and hospital improvement plans were produced. We also introduced an adverse incidence management system in a few provinces, and clearly the intention is to roll this out. And together with the University of KwaZulu-Natal, we produced a national infection prevention and control manual for use by provinces and facilities. There are still ongoing challenges, and I think some of the challenges with respect to the data that we have and the quality of the data, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, is reflected in some of the publications that are put out, including the Lancet publication of both August and September. So there are critical challenges in, for example, agreeing on what the infant mortality rate is and what the maternal mortality rate is. We have been trying to get consensus on these by doing the demographic and health survey. And just to inform our honourable members, the first demographic and health survey was done in 1998, the second in 2003, and we were scheduled to do one 5 years later in 2008. But as the slide suggests, we've not been able to do it because of resource constraints, largely. But we are trying to find the resources to conduct it, next year, it seems. The tracking system for the distribution of pharmaceuticals aimed at tracking and tracing drugs through the supply chain. Again, we were intending to go live nationally in September 2008. It has been piloted in Gauteng provinces, but there were a number of glitches in the piloting of this, which meant that we had to take a few steps back before it could be rolled out. So that has not been completed as planned. The National Department of Statistics South Africa have an MOU on a memorandum of understanding on how to work together to improve official statistics on health. We have started a process of doing an audit of all health systems, including all pieces of software in the country. And this is being done to a consortium and the project managed by CETA, the State Information Technology Agency. And the intention, Honourable Members, is to create an electronic health record. And I think this has been mentioned before. We have also developed an electronic health white paper jointly with the Presidential National Commission on Information. And we are continually reviewing and refining our key health statistics in what's called the National Indicator data set. The National Health Reference Price List, which is the ceiling that the National Department sets in terms of what healthcare providers, doctors in particular, and hospitals can charge, has been produced, but I think as Honourable Members will know, this has been challenged in the courts by a number of organisations, including the Hospital Association of South Africa. But the technical work had been done and the reference price list was published. Technical work for the development of the National Health Insurance is ongoing, and I think the Minister is scheduled to make some announcements about this in the during this week and going forward. And because of that, it's going to be difficult to provide many more details about the NHI. In terms of challenges, we still have drug stockouts at facility level, and these might be a result of suppliers unable to supply to the medical depots for one reason or another not supplying to facilities, or facilities not ordering supplies on time. So for example, on antiretrovirals, we've advised all provinces to keep a 2-month buffer stock at all facilities. And clearly, Honourable Members will recognise that would require some resources to keep a buffer stock. And when resources are low, the first thing that is cut back is your buffer stock. But we've been at pains to impress on all provinces to keep a 2-month buffer stock on ARVs, because the consequences of running out are quite drastic. No licensed dispensers were inspected during the financial year against the target of 15% due to a chronic shortage of pharmacists. The shortage of pharmacists at public health institutions is mirrored by the shortage in the national department. Limited progress was made with reviewing the hospital level standard treatment guidelines and essential drug lists for adults, again due to the shortage of pharmacists. So the OSD for pharmacists will help at the provincial level, at the facility level, and we are hoping that some of these challenges with pharmacists will stabilize over time. Further achievements on health planning and monitoring. We have commenced a benchmarking exercise comparing our prices for medicines against a basket of prices paid for by other countries, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and Spain. This has been completed. The final report is yet to be released. I think members would recall that there's been a significant contestation between the department and especially the pharmaceutical companies around benchmarking and around the countries that you use to benchmark against. Secondly, there's been an ongoing attempt to decrease the prices of medicines, and our estimate is that all of these have resulted in a 30% decrease, with a net saving of about 3 billion rand in the prices that we've been paying for medicines. I guess the issue that has been in the media recently has been around the prices for antiretrovirals, and there's ongoing work with respect to the costing of and benchmarking of antiretrovirals in particular. The National Department has contributed to the development of the African Union's project of a pharmaceutical manufacturing plan for the continent, with a view of South Africa being one of the countries where manufacturing takes place. With respect to African traditional medicine, draft policy has been produced, and we are working to finalize that policy. And as I said, in terms of one of the key challenges is that the recommendations of the pricing committee have been challenged by the pharmaceutical industry. In terms of Program 4, human resources, 8 of the 9 provinces produced human resources for health plans. The South African Dental Technicians Council was inaugurated during June of 2008, and a new South African Nursing Council was inaugurated in July of the same year. And this was in keeping with our targets for these councils. With respect to training mid-level workers, 100 clinical associates. These are the 3-year training program, somewhere between doctors and nurses. One of the categories of mid-level workers that the department is facilitating the training of. We enrolled at the universities of Pretoria, Wits, and Walter Sisulu. And this exceeded the target that we had for 0809, which was 36. So fairly substantial progress is being made in the enrollment of students. And I'm sure Dr. Mahlathi can update us on what's happening with this. In terms of training hospital managers, during the financial year, we had planned to train 122 hospital managers, and had planned by the end of the financial year 140. 23 emergency care technicians were graduated from Northwest EMS College, and the target was to implement this program in 5 provinces, KwaZulu-Natal, Lebone, and I think that's in Gauteng, and the South African Military Health Services underwent accreditation to provide this service and to the region. In terms of placement for community service, this is done every year, pharmacists, doctors, and 7 categories of allied professionals were placed during the financial year. In terms of continuing challenges, we are currently still finalizing the review of our human resources for health planning framework, and as the slide suggests, this could not be completed due to funding constraints. The interim traditional health practitioners council is yet to be established. The due date was December 2008. we are in the process of translating the regulations that will give effect to the Traditional Health Practitioners Act into languages other than English, and this has taken a bit longer than anticipated. Program 5, which is Special Programs and Public Health Entities Management. Under this program, we also find primary health care. Planning processes at district level, health district level, has been strengthened, with 47 of the 52 districts now producing district health plans. Governance committees, and these are clinic committees largely, have been established in 60% of primary health care facilities, and this is almost double what we found in 2007-2008, but clearly we would like 100% of them to have governance committees. Hospital boards have also been established for most hospitals, and we've produced a draft disaster management policy. Clearly, we would like to see district health plans linking very closely with integrated development plans of municipalities to get the intersectoral collaboration, which is key for primary health care. And of the 52 health districts, 37 had district health plans which had clear linkages with the integrated development plans. We had plans to undertake a comprehensive audit of almost all of our 4,000 primary healthcare facilities with respect to physical infrastructure, services they're providing, and human resource capacity. But due to funding constraints, we were not able to complete it. But funding has now been obtained, so we will we are in the process of completing this task in this financial year. Of concern is that the clinic supervision rate. The clinic supervision rate, honourable members, is defined by the number of primary health care clinics visited by a supervisor from the district at least once a month with a report being generated, a written report. And of concern is that instead of going up towards 100%, we had a decline in the supervision rate from 69% to 61%. And the most often mentioned challenges is lack of transport, lack of cars to visit facilities from our clinic supervisor. In terms of primary health care per capita expenditure, and this is expenditure per person per year on primary health care visits, it was recorded, estimated to be 260 rand, so 30 rand short of the target for the 2008-2009 financial year of 290, but up from it's the same expenditure as the 2007-2008 year. So just on looking at average expenditure, this of course will differ province by province, but on average we've not been able to increase the expenditure on primary health care nationally. Continuing on the achievements on program 5, the PHC primary health care utilization rate increased from 2.2 visits per year to 2.4 visits. And this is really the number of times a person typically will visit a primary healthcare facility in that year. Now, because of our information system, Honourable Chair, we don't know if it's the same people visiting often or these are all the people in need. And that's the distinction we need to make. But there certainly has been an increase, which means that with the same amount of money, we are seeing more patients. I think that's the effect of these two numbers. Now, what's of concern, of course, is that the utilization rate is still lower than our own target of 2.7 visits. 22 hospitals have been equipped to perform the benefit medical exams. The benefit medical exams, honorable members, is for occupational health for mines, for the miners who have occupational diseases on the mines, and they need to be examined. And these examinations are done at our public hospitals, and I think it's quite encouraging to see that we've increased the targets more than twice. Ongoing challenges, we've made limited progress on health technology due to a lack of certainty around some of the legislation that govern these regulations. Our emergency center regulations have not been finalized with respect to EMS care. Progress with reviewing hospital business cases. These are the business cases that are used in the hospital improvement program, the capital development program. And these, we are trying to align these with the service transformation plans that each province has developed. And this lack of alignment has resulted in some decrease in performance of this particular program. And limited progress has been made really in development of national standards fairly generally. We had targeted 286 hospitals to appoint hospital information officers, but had only reached 186 appointed officers by the end of the financial year. With respect to legislation, two pieces of legislation were passed by Parliament during the financial year, the Medicines and Related Substances Bill and the Tobacco Products Control Amendment Bill, and this was what was planned for in the financial year. The Medical Schemes Amendment Bill and the National Health Amendment Bill were tabled, and I think members of Parliament are fully aware of the parliamentary legislative program. In terms of communication, and the next few bullet points reflect, in summary, some of the communication and advocacy and social mobilization activities of the Department of Health. We've been doing a lot of work around smoking and tobacco control, the benefits of pneumococcal and rotavirus with respect to pneumonias and diarrheas. There was a fairly large cholera awareness campaign linked to the cholera outbreak in certain parts of the country. I guess communication is always like a black hole. You know, you can never fill it. In keeping with legislation, 100% of public health institutions are now smoke-free areas. In terms of some of the challenges from a legal point of view, I've noted some of them already. In addition to those, the South African Research, Medical Research Council Amendment Bill was not tabled as planned. And with respect to health promotion, we had anticipated many more ministerial visits than were conducted. Program 6, International Relations, Health Trade and Health Product Regulation. The achievements, we have a number of bilateral and multilateral agreements that have been signed, and the following were signed in 2008, the South Africa-Namibia one in August, South Africa-Cameroon in September, and South Africa-Burundi again in September. We also concluded agreements on health matters with Guinea-Bissau, Malawi, Mali, Sudan, and Zambia. These are yet to be finalized in terms of signatures between the two countries. We are currently finalizing a MOU between South Africa and China in the area of traditional medicine. The Department of Health also hosted the African Union Continental Workshop on Maternal, Neonatal and Child Mortality Review from the 13th to the 16th of April. This workshop brought together officials from 10 countries in the SADC region, Botswana, the DRC, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, Swaziland, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. The intention, Honourable Chair, in this workshop was to explain the confidential inquiry system to our colleagues in other countries who had expressed an interest on implementing the same methodology in their countries. We also facilitated the development of an implementation plan on maternity mortality reviews with the AU. In terms of incomplete work, the draft a program of action in Burundi has been sent to officials in Burundi, but we are yet to receive their feedback on it. So the MOU is typically followed by a series of concrete activities that will be conducted, and that's reflected in the program POA. And we had intended to do a bit more in Sudan, but the political situation there made it a bit difficult to sign a health agreement. In terms of other programs of actions that were concluded, we have concluded programs of action with Algeria, Congo, Cameroon, Rwanda, Malawi, Nigeria, and Zambia. And these have been submitted to these countries for finalization. And we have assisted the Congolese, DRC, to establish a nursing council in the DRC. In terms of assistance in Namibia, from this province, from Kurdistan, a number of surgeons and anesthetists visited Namibia in June to conduct cardiac surgery, and that's an ongoing collaboration between Kurdistan and Namibia. We were able to recruit 17 doctors from Tunisia, five of whom have been deployed already by November 2008. So that's to provide technical assistance during a WHO-sponsored training program where members from the Medicines Regulatory Authority, that's what MRA stands for, that's the secretariat to the Medicines Control Council, were trained in conducting evaluations for clinical trials. Continuing challenges, guidelines for the evaluation of clinical data by the MCC and the MRA to do it in-house. We were hoping to do all of our evaluations in-house, but because of insufficient technical staff, we have not been able to reach that target, and there are still, therefore, quite big backlogs in the evaluation of applications for clinical applications. 60 students have been sent to Cuba for training as medical doctors, and they left in October last year. And they are from the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, and Northern Cape. And equally, 41 final year students passed their exams in December 2008, who are then now doing their rotation at South African University. We have registered a large number of clinical trials that are being done in South Africa, and the Department of Health has a website which has a description of each of these clinical trials. So we have 910 clinical trials registered. There are still challenges on the clinical trials website, not being uploaded onto the World Health Organization platform, and we still have some challenges on the number of toxicology evaluations that are done by the MCC. And the reason for that is really we don't have the number of evaluators that we need. So, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, some of the highly summarized progress against the priorities for 2008-2009 reflected in this diagram. With respect to spending health programs, we've certainly made some inroads on the big program, but there's a long way to go. I think we will be the first to admit that we have a long way to go. And I think some of the mortality data substantiates the distance we still have to travel. With respect to facility improvement plans, we have close to 400 public hospitals. We've made a start of having improvement plans in after doing a rigorous assessment in 2007, and clearly we need to upscale this fairly dramatically. Development of an integrated national health information system. We are on the road with respect to our electronic patient record. We are in the process of finalizing the national indicator data set, which is reported routinely through the district health information system. But again, the information system is far from perfect. In terms of strengthening health financing, some work was done outside the department on the NHI, and the ministers will be making announcements of what the department will be doing to take that work forward in the next few days. With respect to pharmaceuticals and medicines, there's a number of things that have been done there, and the result, I think, is a significant reduction in medicine prices. So we would like to see further reduction in medicine prices, including on ARVs. We've made some progress in strengthening human resources for health, but clearly we have significant shortages of human resources for health in the country in all categories. We have a number of the bilateral, trilateral, and multilateral agreements with a number of countries, and clearly servicing those countries with the capacity we have will be an issue that we need to deal with going forward. And then finally, on improving management and communication, we have a new structure at the National Department with now 6 branches, and therefore a change in the budget structure that came into effect in the financial year 08-09, and we've been trying to improve our communication strategy. Turning now, Honourable Chair, to the budget and expenditure, the final appropriation for the National Department of Health, and this is just the National Department of Health, not the entire health system, was 15 billion rand. I think there are a few zeros missing from the slide. This seems to suggest that the final appropriation was 15 million rand. Now, of the 15 billion rand, 14 billion was in conditional grants. So the amount allocated for the functioning just of the national department is about ₹1 billion. So 10% is allocated to the national department of the total allocation. 91% really is allocated to as conditional grants. Actual total expenditure amounted to 15.4 billion rand, which was almost 98% of the total amount voted. Under expenditure was 386 million rand, which was 2.4% of the total expenditure. Conditional grant under conditional grants make up of the 2.4%. I think this is the last point needs to be clarified. Of the 2.4%, 93% under expenditure was accounted for by the conditional grant expenditure. So it's not 93% under expenditure, it's 93% of 2.4% that was under expenditure. And this is the budget and the expenditure by budget program. For budget program 1, administration, the budget was 244 million rand. The expenditure at the end of the financial year was 241 million rand, which was a 98% expenditure rate. On strategic health programs, the budget was 678 million, of which a significant proportion is conditional grant for HIV, and the expenditure was 649 million, which gives you a 96% expenditure rate. On health planning and monitoring, the budget was 109 million, the expenditure was 109 million, and the percentage spent on the budget was close to 100%. On human resources, management and development, program 4, the budget was 37 million, the expenditure was 26 million, and the percentage spent was 71 million. Program 5, health services, budget was 90 million, the expenditure was 80 million, and the percentage spent was 89%. And on international relations, health, trade, and product regulation, program 6, the budget was 96.9 million, the expenditure was 96.5 million, and the expenditure close to 100%. So the total percentage spent then against all six programs was 96%. This figure just shows you the budget against the accrual, against the actual expenditure by the National Department, excluding conditional grants. And really, it reflects what I've just said on the budget. The next few slides summarize by budget program what were some of the reasons for the under expenditure, and we'll go through it program by program. With respect to program 1, administration, the program, as I suggested, showed a small under expenditure, and the under expenditure is mainly ascribed to delays in relocating to the newly upgraded Civitas building. I think honorable members will know that 3 years ago we vacated our building in Pretoria to the former DTI building, and the building has been in renovation process since then. And these funds have been committed to enable us to relocate in the 08-09 financial year back to Civitas, but because the work is not complete, we couldn't relocate. So some of this under expenditure is because of the non-relocation to Civitas. With respect to budget program 2, strategic health program, the under expenditure is mainly in the area of forensic pathology services and the conditional grant related to the refurbishment of mortuaries. And some of the funds there could not be spent because of problems with service providers, largely building contractors. Some of the funds to some NGOs were not fully released before the end of the financial year because of lack of full compliance with the requirements of the PFMA, that we needed audit statements, quarterly reports to be provided, etc., by NGOs. In terms of program 3, this program underspent by 110,000 rand, so its expenditure really was close to what was intended. In the program 4, health resources and management development, the program showed an under expenditure, and it's really in one area that the program underspent on, and that is the audit of the nursing colleges project. Honorable members will recall that there was an intention to ramp up the training of nurses, and that meant kind of refurbishing also nursing colleges. And we had then asked for a sum of 10 million rand to do an audit of their condition and then to put a plan together to refurbish them. A rollover of funds was requested between the 2008-09 and 2009-10 years. In terms of health services, this program spent 96.4%. Under expenditure was the withheld funds on the hospital revitalization program in some provinces due to delays in construction. Again, rollovers were requested because these funds were actually committed even though they weren't fully spent. International relations underspent by 0.4%, 382,000. With respect to expenditure by economic classification, and this is the standard line items, compensation of employees in the national department, of the total appropriation of 294 million rand, the department spent 292.5. So we fully spent our allocation for compensation of employees in 08-09. With respect to goods and services, 97% of the funds allocated were spent. On transfers and subsidies, we spent 98% on transfers and subsidies. And these transfers and subsidies, the CFO will explain, are to public entities, amongst others. Payments for capital assets, there was only at 86.3% expenditure, and the reasons for the under expenditure were explained already, and this is due to the fact that we withheld some funds for construction, including our move to the Civitas building. So provincial expenditure on the conditional grant, as honourable members know, we have a number of conditional grants which really make up 91% of the total amount of 15 billion appropriated to the National Department of Health. These are the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant, the forensic pathology services grant, which is to renovate our mortuaries, the health professions training and development grant, the hospital revitalization grant, and the national tertiary services grant. Of these, and I'm just looking at the last column, the outcome as a percentage of total, of the total grant, we've spent 95% of the conditional grant. And with respect to each of the conditional grants, we spent as follows. On the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant, 98.6%. On the forensic pathology grant, 97.7%. On the health professions training and development grant, 97.2%. Of the hospital revitalization grant, 83.9%. And on the national tertiary services grant, 97.7%. We also reported on the utilization of donor funds in the annual report. And the department has been privileged to have a number of partners from development agencies. And these funds are deposited, as honourable members know, into the RDP fund and then drawn into the department to implement specific projects. The amount spent in that financial year was 146 million rand, and donor funds are mainly sourced to areas that are considered priority by the Department of Health and donors. The trading entities, the Medical Research Council, which undertakes scientific research on both clinical and health system issues, they received an amount of 236 million rand from the department in 2008-2009. And we work with the MRC to determine research priorities. And one critical area of research that we fund is the vaccines against HIV through SAVI. The National Health Laboratory Service, which came into operation in May 2001, also receives some funding from the National Department. The bulk of their funding, of course, is paid through user fees levied against lab tests that the province has ordered. But it received a transfer for for equipment to the amount of 70.2 million in 2008-2009. In terms of the Medical Schemes Council, which regulates the private medical scheme industry, the department transferred a sum of 6.1 million rand to the council to effect their function. The bulk of their funding, of course, comes from levies paid by medical schemes. The South African National AIDS Council Trust, this trust, as I think honourable members know, has been dormant for some while, and the department is now working with the new SANAC Secretariat and the Deputy President's Office to to do a number of things to restructure the trust and unlock the funds so that the funds can be made available to the new SANAC Secretariat. In the meantime, the National Department has been funding activities of the SANAC Secretariat. Another trading entity is the Mines and Works Compensation Fund. The Compensation Commissioner for Occupational Diseases is responsible for the payment of benefits to miners and ex-miners who have been certified to suffer from lung-related diseases because of working conditions. Payments to the beneficiaries are made in terms of the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act, and the value of the fund for this purpose is 1.1 billion rand, and the department transfers the amount of 2.3 million per year for the 08-09 financial year. The entire financial system of the Office of the Compensation Commissioner is currently being re-engineered, and the CFO, I'm sure, will be able to provide more details on the functioning of the CCOD. In terms of our annual financial statements, as I said earlier, the department received a qualified audit opinion. There's some good news in that the prior year's qualifications have been addressed to the satisfaction of the Auditor General. The qualification areas now are new areas and are not repetitions of the previous financial years. And as I said before, there are two areas of qualification. The one is the revenue management of the Medicines Control Council, and the second is the travel and subsistence payments related to the use of vehicles for our fleet management in the National Department. The remedial action with respect to those two areas, action plans have been developed in September this year to address these two weaknesses, and monthly monitoring and reporting systems are now in place to ensure that these negative audit opinions do not recur. The interim annual financial statements due on the 30th of October will also assist the department to ensure compliance with both the Public Finance Management Act and Treasury regulations on a monthly basis. So this is an attempt to improve our financial management at the National Department. To conclude, Honourable Chairperson and Members, the priorities for this financial year are the following 10, and these are reflected in our new strategic plan for 09-10 going forward. One is the provision of strategic leadership and the creation of a social compact for better health outcomes. The second is the implementation of a national health insurance plan. The third is improving quality of care, health services. The fourth is overhauling the healthcare system and improving its management. Fifth is improving human resource management. Sixth is revitalization of physical infrastructure. Number seven is accelerated implementation of HIV and AIDS, the reduction of mortality due to TB and associated diseases. Number eight is mass mobilization for better health for the population. Number nine, review of the drug policy. And 10, strengthening research and development. In conclusion, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, despite many challenges, we think that the Department of Health has been able to demonstrate program in some critical service delivery areas during 08-09. With the guidance of the Minister and Deputy Minister in the National Department and working closely with the MECs and provinces, we are committed to working harder in 09-10 to achieve the targets that we've set. We have a new 10-point plan for the period 2009 to 2014, which both reflects continuity with some health system priorities we had in the past, but also reflects some serious new issues. And I think really suggests in terms of the way in which the leadership of the Minister and the Deputy Minister, amongst others, have played themselves out in the past few months, shows an acceleration towards achieving the targets we set in the new 10-point plan. So clearly it cannot and will not be business as usual, and the next 5 years will see significantly greater urgency with respect to the implementation of more effective strategy to help improve the health profile of all South Africans. I think we would like to suggest that the WHO's Commission on the Social Determinants of Health, which released its report towards the middle of last year, does show that health outcomes are significantly influenced by issues outside the health system, outside the health service delivery system. which means that the health sector will have to work far more closely with other sectors in ensuring particular health outcomes. And of course, water, sanitation, housing, education, agriculture are a number of the other government departments that we need to work far more closely with to achieve the health outcomes that we desire. So I think we'd like to conclude with those six points, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
How we have been dealing with issues of in Liberia, CPN, I think as a cultural community, we are very much aware that the budget is not as public to be. But as another thing is, in the way we are heading, we expect that it should be utilized to the best of our community. And God loves the process, but I will try to. When you look at slide 10, whereby you talk about the 50% of health institutions conducting monthly mobility and mortality meetings, 53% conducting a meeting, 53%. And this is one of the most important meetings. We should really look at it as a meeting. And we know that most of the time, people are not in the offices, they are in meetings. But why would we really not really treat it that this type of a meeting, whereby there is a discussion regarding what is happening at facility level and coming up with a solution and laying back, and it's not been attended? Then I don't see the rationale why this meeting is not happening. Slide 11. Summit. Continue to provide leadership in the country's effort to combat HIV and AIDS to a national level. The chairperson has said, whatever is the national, summit at national level. Does this happen to the provincial council of AIDS? Does it happen to the district AIDS council, to the local AIDS council? When I'm sitting here as a member of the community, I know that there is nothing happening to the three I have already. I don't know in other problems, but where I come from, I know there are problems. And there are people who have been hired, there are resources, and at a certain stage, there is no clear definition of what is the Department of Health doing and what are they doing. And there is no even clear definition where should they fall. Others they are reporting in the Department of Health, and referring to that, and then others are getting into local government. They are just good channels and they are doing nothing. And at the end of the day, is one of the things to meet the department together with the program managers of summit. And LSK must come and explain. Because we couldn't be hearing what we are hearing about HIV when we got the department dealing with HIV and summit dealing with HIV. The curate, the TB curate. I know that this is a very, very problematic subject to talk about, but what I'm saying that as a man, I know that we used to do very well in before the electronic register was introduced, whereby we were accepting manually, and I know very well that the low curing may not be exactly what is happening because of the management of the electronic register, whereby at a certain stage when the sector at a certain stage it doesn't pay, whereby you find that the clinic, because of transport problems, cannot send whatever needs to be kept up on one time. Why can't we do both? To see, and this is what the cure rate according to the electronic register, and this is the cure rate according to manual. So that at the end of the day, when you're saying that we don't perform well in TB, we really know that we are missing. place the guidelines. When I look at the annual report, it will be saying that after the guidelines were first disseminated, the protocols were done, so many protocols, whatever. But those numbers are output. That's what you send to the facility. But what are the outcomes? Because we do have a poor health services, and but we've got beautiful guidelines, protocols, and whatever. And even then, maybe, but then might be. Like you are saying that you want to go to bed, must. But at the end of the day, nobody will be coming. We have went to wherever we benchmark, and this is the product of what we have benchmarked at the end of the day. And that's like my problem. According to the need of pharmacists, one will want to know the vacancy rate. What is the vacancy rate for pharmacists? And another thing, the utilization of community pharmacies. I cannot it's like supervision, clean supervision. Because those pharmacists must go and supervise the clinic according to drug supply management. Now, if they cannot do certain things because of how is the vacancy rate? And how are the community pharmacists in charge? My last one, 10%, last one, the delay in the implementation of OSC. Yeah. We have seen five doctor crisis. Now, I will say that you want to say that you have a pharmacist and dentist crisis too. And it is not correct. As I'm sitting there resisting the impacting, I cannot say assessing that it is that like when we only do things when we don't find. I really want to know because it's been said that there is a delay or care in resolving bad issues. I want to know where now. And another thing still around the open field. There has been there was no clarity around the professional nurses. We've got professional nurses, and we've got this professional nurses who could coordinate health problems. And I can tell you when I'm sitting here, those professional nurses now, they want to go to the clinic. Because according to OSD, somebody wanted not to translate, whereby we talk about the problem manager. And we are saying that two people are not supposed to get OSD. And we are having a serious problem. And we know that among other things of poor performance is breaking of things among these people who are excluded from OSD and they are professional men and they are enrolled to the South African Nursing Council. I will come there.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to congratulate Spartan on the general improvement. I can't give you the previous year's qualification for the day. My question is now about the two new issues. Will you explain the reason for the lack of systems to identify and reconcile these to the amount of 29 material values relating to the medicine from the council and an amount of 23.2 million relating to the travel and facility care resulting in the qualifying support of the general? You do mention in your presentation that your general action plan is to extend the government to address resistance in the environment. Two new qualifications. Can you give us more information regarding the action plan for anything like that? Of course, we believe all of us try to do that an unqualified report. That's the main thing.
Thank you, Jefferson, and thank you for the presentation. I've got quite a lot of questions, so Chair, that's stopping from the time. I'll just carry on with my stuff. Just to do with the OSD for doctors and dentists, etc., because you mentioned that on page 62 of the report. If you look at, if you look at page 69 of last year's report, it says that together with the DCSA and Treasury, the department also states that the first two work with the OSD medical and dental practitioners, specialists, and pharmacists, and EMS practitioners is happening. But then there were no indications made in the year under review, and hence we had a strike. How do you justify that? And what went wrong there? But also, as far as human resources are concerned, you mentioned that 63 or 62 students were going to Cuba for training as doctors. But why aren't we increasing our own capacity to train doctors? The universities have been static for the last 10 to 15 years with enrollment of about 1,200 students a year. We haven't increased that with the increase of burden of disease, and we don't allow the private sector to train doctors, but yet we allow Cuba to train doctors. That's just a bit. Then on page 17 of the report, under the National Health Laboratory Services, you said the National Health Laboratory Services took over the laboratory services in KZN during the year under review, but you also said that last year. It's word for word, it's a few pages cut in. So could you just explain that one? As far as the free state is concerned, let's talk about maternal child and women's health nutrition. Anyway, let me talk about the free state. You said in the report that you did evaluate the free state ARV program as well as a few other problems. But yet, the year under review, the free state stopped the rollout plan for I think nearly a month. I went from a learning office for myself and the doctor stopped for a month. Patients couldn't get ARV. So what went wrong then? Did the free state apply to national for emergency funding? Because if you look at the back of the report, on page 190, the adjustments, the free state received no adjustments last year. Yet they ran out of money for ARVs and other medical services. So why was that? What do you put in place to ensure the free state and other problems don't run out of services once more? And also, what's been, can you give us, how do you know that the ARV program, which you mentioned, we have 990,000 on the program by the end of March next year, is it sustainable? Do you have enough funding for the problems with enough funding? In the NHI, you asked us several times not to raise the issue. You mentioned that the minister is going to talk about it, but you have it as a priority at the beginning of your presentation. You have it as a second priority for this year at the end of your presentation, and you talk about it during your presentation. So I'd like to ask a few questions on the NHI. You said that some work on the NHI has been done outside of the department. It's about who needs to be that you have involvement and what kind of work is done. Was any costing of NHI done? And if so, what are we looking at? And is it affordable? And that's what we need to know. And when will we see a document on the NHI? The minister, I know you're here, and you can't answer, but he did promise a document in June. In this, we're now in November. We're in November now. So, you know where that is. As far as the qualified report is concerned, I think this is the 8th year out of 9, we've got a qualified report, which is disappointing. I do take your point that there are different issues, that have been qualified, but that's the point of this next season. The ANC work did raise those issues, so I won't repeat them, but also if you look at the Division of Revenue Act, the Auditor General raised the same concerns this year as did last year, if the members want to look at page 159. And you look at page 127 of last year's report, it's exactly the same concern. So what's been done about the Division of Revenue Act? Then funding, generally, I know the department is underfunded, but if you go through the report, many of the targets that you set yourself and fail to achieve, and you started there, that's the funding. But surely you set a target with that outcome funding, or the part of the Australia, with the second draft report. So, what is happening this year, the current year, that the task is that have we received sufficient funding, and if not, for which program, I suppose you could take all of them. And then just the Millennium Goal, how many do you actually think we're going to achieve? I know you said we're well on our way for the malaria one, but what about maternal death and infant death? Then you said on page 29 of the report, you talk about the Saving Mothers and Saving Babies report, which is adopted, which was released in 2004 from a recall process. And yet, only 8-9% of institutions have implemented these recommendations. It may seem high, but 5 years down the line, not 100% of institutions are implementing recommendations. And why is that? And we will see the reports being implemented properly. Is HIV AIDS spread? TB? Has been raised, so I don't know what that means. In last year's report, it said that 8 out of 9 provinces of the official Limpopo had a strategic plan for communicable diseases. Has Limpopo finalized their report? And if not, why not? What's happening for that? Which is very difficult taking between different reports. Just on page 47, the auxiliary toxicology background and reduction of waiting lists. Just to let you know, I'm trying to help a particular individual who's been told they have to wait 60 months to advance toxicology report, which is unacceptable. 60 months is just fishing out Johannesburg one. That I know they are currently under renovation, but generally, I mean, 60 months is unacceptable. And the insurance, and it does depend on many other families, insurance companies won't pay anything out until substance abuse is put in. Mental health and substance abuse on page 49, he said nationally 63% of hospitals were equipped and listed at 72-hour assessment facilities. Now, if you go to the Sphere Hospital, their mental health patients, men and women, are all in one room and sitting on the floor. There's no bed. So, what kind of standards I get that 60 hospitals may be equipped, but what kind of standards are you enforcing at these hospitals? Because it's unacceptable that these patients are sitting on the floor and men and women together. I've talked about the these days, the CCNT, which you evaluated them, if they run out of ARV. And just on substance abuse. Substance abuse, you don't mention people alcohol syndrome at all in the report. What is happening with people alcohol syndrome? They're the highest rate in the world, and yet there's nothing mentioned here about that report, as far as alcohol abuse. And in the Office of Standards Compliance, last year, for this year, only 22 million has been allocated to the office, but unable to actually enforce normal standards at public hospitals around the country. It's impossible for that kind of thing. What is being done to strengthen the hands of the office of standards compliance? Because we need to increase standards and services at our international hospitals. Chair, I'll leave it there because I don't want to dominate too much, but I do have other questions. Make sure I'm thinking. Okay. Thank you. Sure.
Yeah, I think it's a misdiagnosis.
Maybe we should make it sort of not about the map.
Yeah.
We're going to have enough time. We started early, so we could make sure the answer will come back again.
Sure, thank you. A couple of things that the nursing college project, we sort of briefly mentioned this, but obviously this is critical and they've got the contract being involved in emergency and so we didn't know really what are the plans to be there and prioritize that. And I think from the point of view, or education point of view, that the nursing colleges are going to form more largely in the health department here. So when we were discussing it once before, it was kind of insinuated that education would be dealing with it, but in education, I'm just insinuating that health will be dealing with it, so we just wanted to hear that. and I'm under the National Health Insurance Plan. When are the public going to get involved? What are your plans in terms of putting the issue out there and bringing the public on board with whatever is happening? Our strategies or measures that we put in place in order to address the property shortages. Are we monitoring them? Are we seeing any effects? How are we reading what we've actually put in place? Are we on the right track? Are we not? Are we being able to find solutions? The immunization of children with measles and the challenges around that. Are we seeing specific measures in place to sort that out? And then there's the thing about the three-four times limit, that the issues around grants and people not being able to get certain grants, and there's some kind of query, and that's seemingly, although there's going to be some legislation coming out in social development, it looks like an opportunity to sort this out. Obviously, it's going to rely on health department's input there. Are we really up to speed with what the issue actually is? And are we going to be able to make sure that the information really addresses what the issue is? And then just very quickly, the emergency care program is set with five promises we've taken on, and it looks very like we've just done it in one. And I'm just wondering if you could give us what the issues were around the other four promises. And on that tube and doctor issue, you spoke about not only were we sending doctors to Cuba, but that we were also examining people here with Cuban exams. What does that say? Are we preparing those doctors for Cuba, or are we saying our exams are not good enough, or
correctly, but what one has been seeing is a lot of young people getting older. You know, it is a national crisis as far as I'm concerned. Young people all over the place, women and men. There are few signs some medication, you know, that we recommend it for as being effective in AIDS, in the future, like the famous one, who better? Have any chemical, you know, analysis, because really they were presented as being very effective. Any chemical analysis, scientific analysis, and they were presented to any chemical analysis. And then just the last one. I think that it's a comment, rather than anything. I think that for the department to record an understanding in any area is really quite unacceptable. Because there is so much, you know, that I'm just really calling one the understanding in various areas. I'll just make that another understanding in motorists, forensic pathology, human resource and all, and management development. I believe that it's a thank you.
I don't want to be open with that number, but they came to us asking us to give them money. We gave them, even if it was not us, those were there, we gave them money. Now we are interrogating them on one page that they were going to do. And I think that's not true for us. Let's continue with what they said they were going to do, and they didn't do with the money that they had. So that when we move to us, we know that they were going to do.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation and your confidence. And slide 8, 15 year review considered that there were 2,600 students in the university. So, calculating absolutely, this has been long standing, and to my surprise, it's still a challenge. Something needs to be done in our city. Particularly if you compare this to what is listed on the other slide, about 124 people trained instead of 122, which exceeded the target. But what happens after training is the main problem. And then when you make the budget expenditure with the outcome on the ground, definitely I'm not sure where that money goes, when you take the two comparatively, they will not make it out. This is our provision of community service, doctors, and everybody allied training. How do you train those people? Do you just train them? Do you have a metric or system or anything that you teach those people? Or do you do it according to the needs of the hospital and the level of that hospital? On the 25th or 8th year, only two systems have been noted as lacking. Are we saying that previous problems that we used to have in other systems like human resources in terms of structure, the finance in terms of management and conduct, the procurement in terms of not paying companies in time, therefore affecting service delivery, asset management, and other problems that we've been having in the system? Are we saying things are now okay from there? I mean, is there anything that we can say or comment on the audit? Qualified audit pertaining to those other things. And then there's a process today. The slide 11 about the male condoms. I mean, a tender process is a process, and honestly, this is costing the country in terms of the infections and all this. What type of debate can we have when we use a tender or a distribution of condoms or whatever? And then slide 12. A limited progress of making the assessment of the public health facility. I mean, what would be the credential of an appropriate service provider on this aspect, that is like for the last point. And then slide 13, achievement, guidelines for management of non-communicable diseases. I mean, who is responsible to monitor adherence and evaluation of the outcome of this point in terms of the non-communicable diseases? And then slide 14, we talk about adverse incidents and management system, which are really critical problems. Can we know which problems are going to be that system, either already there or waiting system?
And then the last point on the slide, for the additional information convention and control manual, is there a written document or read or is that maybe we could get approved or something? And then, okay, when you look at the challenges in general, you find that a lot of programs or projects or processes could not be done with funding. I think this is not new, and I'm not sure what the department is doing on the point, but in terms of normally I would say that when you go back, I just should be a family that has a department. Why don't you use that time maybe to negotiate more funds and, you know, and motivate that person to do that? I'm not sure whether this also is due to the use of consultants by the department that use a lot of consultants. They don't maybe identify children by the type of training or whatever. On achievement and economy, there's a lot of documents that we produce at the exposure. But what happens after that is not really the intent, particularly in terms of implementation or environmental issues. And there I would say incompatible to the state of affairs we have at advance. But other questions that are important for the next one.
Okay, the last one.
Most of it is something by engineering, but I think I'm going to also feel the electricity technical education within this. Firstly, I'm concerned also about the economy, which is only 50%. And if they want to check it and then it's not tested, if those condoms are discussed with this way, what is happening? Also, I want to ask all this slide also when I'm concerned about the steel condoms. As much as you say that the achieved to be used in the steel condoms, my problem is that this steel condom is for the problem was it has been passed.
Of medical
common. All those people who are doing things, where do they go? How do I take them? Because those students have really are talking about. You say yes, I'm all in South Africa, but you don't think that it's not clear how are they distributed across the shortage in the province. Thank you.
I'm going to request all the other managers I have those who manage to come, much as well as the other that the government manager are not working. They're not sitting in the back there. They're not doing the work like that. I think it's very good in the acting head of the government. But I think we don't have to go there now because just go for it.
And you said the presentation is different to the annual report. I don't know, you didn't say what the question is different. And then he said they will be asking about phones and things that we present to the annual report.
I don't know. Because in fact, normally it's only the DG, the Chief Financial Officer, DG Planning.
We want them here so that they can answer.
But that's 78 people.
No, you can pick up the main one. There are six programs.
Well, that's why I asked Hercy and Logan, because normally they wouldn't even come.
At least in one program. We're expecting 6 people at least. He's handling human resources.
Yes.
We could have somebody with this monitor. The six people that are handling those who want
that. See, but also, I presented the appropriation committee last week, and they told us we must save costs.
I think this is the problem. I don't think they're taking the portfolio committee seriously. I think this is what
maybe one of us just call and ask who's expected. Because I thought we'd been generous by bringing the two throat main people.
At least the six programs, at least there must be somebody. There's this other thing of the conversation of the society. I think they will
be winning. Dr. Chetty will provide the slides that I presented to Cabinet Committee last week. What happened? She couldn't put out like this. And so she presented me, she was pretty uncomfortable about it. So she asked me to
Put out something. Yeah, so there are a number of people. So there's some questions around HR, but some questions around finance, a lot of questions around the program. Questions around HR.
Let me know. I'll handle
you. You answer. I'll tell you which one. There's NHI for sure. The order query is finally going to answer, right?
Cabinet hasn't come to our item yet, so I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that I don't suddenly get called to go back to it.
In the course of the presentation, a number of health research projects and monitoring programs that aren't happening because of lack of money. what's coming there, and then what's coming up.
So,
you know, I know that there's been a move to
Trim
budget. Is that what's happening?
Well, I think it's helps with the people that are searching. You know, Cammy can answer the question because it's, you know, all the research can fall out there.
Which one, sir?
No, I mean, it's just the SADHS. It's a big one.
The big issue is working out the coordination between the budget cycle and the development of our priorities. So what we do is we put priorities in, and then as you simultaneously get budgets in. And what happens in the South African Demographic Health Survey is that it becomes more expensive. And so the funds that we had weren't adequate to conduct the whole survey. So the project itself hasn't been put on hold. We started with the implementation, working out with the money that we given, and trying to approach other organizations that have done funding or not get funded. So it's just been delayed because of that initial lack of funding. Some of the other surveys that we've put down as wanting to do, and then we didn't receive the funding for it. And then we have to re-prioritize that.
Are you looking for donor funding? Are you looking for
Because
they just
feel
very
important
what you do
now. Why don't you look at it tomorrow and come back to me just quickly?
Specific, I'm asking on my presentation.
Yes. So then you can ask me specifically which one.
Thank you.
Then we do the finance one, then we do the program.
Yeah.
Right. And then can we get him in touch? Can we get him in touch? If he wants to help us establish him. Look, ministry of time.
I think that we need to look at our Because I think the same amount of food that you are eating, that the extinguishes are not going to be salad, than one quality. That's half of it. But half of it goes to the person that you are asking. Because you obviously can know what you should do. It's part of finality. And I think this is what all the many people have from that. We are here as portfolio consumers. We are an extension of parliament, and we see that you are underhanded. There's no doubt about it. As a matter of fact. And we want to fight for you and make sure that you get more money. But we get sometimes when we find that there's underhanded. We spend it. We have to fight for somebody who does not seem to help you. Because you need to help us to say, we're over friends rather than both of them are best at you. The understanding and the overspending, both of them are evil. But for me, in a country like the one that we have, we should rather overspending than understanding. Because there is not very difficult to talk or not in understanding in one country. The last time, that I said, I would request them specifically to you, as far as any time. I don't say we don't need to discuss it in the capital, but I would refer that let's wait until they give us something that says this is what's going to happen. But I think that's one thing that we don't need to discuss. We can discuss that and see if that we can discuss it. But I don't think that no one that's working on their behalf.
I'll try to put it out that I will report that. I'll tell you about my understanding and economics.
I don't think that's what I wanted to say, man. What I wanted to request, one of the that why would next week I want to talk to the minister so that the minister should be here with us and tell us what is actual whether the people give a deadline as to what is going to happen to the minister so that we can discuss it.
Okay, that's fine, but the fact is the following will still report back on the report.
Okay.
And page 59, there it goes, and it's done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so can you. We were led by Dr. Jochen today. So I'm not sure whether
you're
talking to
you. Mr. President, thank you very much, Chair, and honourable members, colleagues. Again, just my apology. I specifically came up yesterday to just make sure that I was here for the Portfolio Committee, and I must really apologize for not being here for the first bit. And thank you very much. My colleagues for doing the presentation. Chair, I thought perhaps I can start off with because I've just been briefed by Dr. Pillay on some of the issues, and I thought perhaps I can just start off with some of the general points and maybe just add on the issues around national health insurance and the question of the underspending and the our role with regards to the provinces. I want to start off first, Chair, by just reassuring yourself and the members of the Portfolio Committee and reaffirming that we take the Portfolio Committee and the work of Parliament very seriously. And we have ensured that, you know, you've made the request before that you do expect the Director General, the Acting Director General to be present at these meetings, and I think that we have been pretty consistent in ensuring that that's the case. And I must apologize, I take full responsibility for not having all the program managers here. I thought we had sort of fairly covered, just to say from the programs that we have, program one is administration, and I'm responsible for that as the acting DG. Program two is on strategic programs, which Dr. Pillay is responsible for. Program 3 is on health planning and monitoring, which I'm responsible for as DDG. Then we've got Program 5, which is human resources, which Dr. Mishlati is responsible for. The person, the two DDGs who haven't called, is for Program 5, which is health services, Dr. Nikki Pudyarji, and in Program 6, which is Dr. Mrs. Mintari Masal, which is International Health Liaison. I'll make the commitment that at the next meeting, not only will I lay any of you who else needs to be brought along, but we'll just make sure that we cover it with all of the program managers. We've also got our chief director for strategic planning, Ms. Tulani Masalele, and then our acting DDG for finance, chief financial officer, which is Ms. Kani Veni. Okay. So we did try, but again, I accept the point fully, and we'll try and see what are the other key programs, and then maybe for those programs, we'll invite both the cluster manager and director if need be. So I hope I've reassured members that we take this work very seriously. We'll also ensure that there is a representative from the Free State. I know that the HIV and antiretroviral treatment issue is a big thing, so Dr. Pillay will send somebody from his cluster, and I just need to know if there's any other issues that will be raised, so which will cover the other aspects. Chair, with regard to the question of national health insurance, I made the point to the portfolio committee on appropriations that national health insurance is just seen as a single point divorced from all other aspects of the public health system. And I think importantly, when Dr. Pillay presented the 10-point plan, you cannot view national health insurance in isolation from all other aspects. And the minister has stressed that part of the implementation of national health insurance is strengthening the public health system, improving the quality of health care, overhauling the total health system in order to ensure that there's effective implementation. And I think that's something that everyone would agree on. The question of, and I know what has been asked for, is a question of a discussion document in order to, just on the framework around NHI. That is going through its process, this due process of going through cabinet, and the minister is going to be briefing on progress with regard to those issues. And that press conference, I think, that has been called for tomorrow, together with other issues around HIV and AIDS. So there will be further details. So the question around some of the aspects that have been put into the annual report, it does state on the design and implementation of NHI. I want to stress that the implementation has started as soon as we started with this program of action, and when I say started, I'm not talking that nothing has happened previously, but when this program of action was adopted, that implementation is happening with the strengthening of the public health system is one of the key points around the implementation of the NHI. The issue around the underspending within the program. Firstly, we are very grateful that the portfolio committee has categorically stated that the health system is underfunded. And in fact, in the foreword of the annual report, that point has been made by the erstwhile DG of health about the challenges with regard to underfunding. We understand the viewpoint that it is difficult to argue for extra funds when there is underspending. But I need to again put that into context. The underspending has happened in specific programs which have been earmarked for certain functions, and once those funds are earmarked as conditional grants, it cannot be shifted to other areas of pressure. Now, we'd like a situation where it can be shifted to other areas of pressure, but it doesn't happen that way. So, while, for example, the hospital revitalization program would have underspending in that program, that money can't be just shifted, say, to another program like the National Tertiary Services Grant, one of the other conditional grants, because that goes against what's in the Division of Revenue Act. We do, however, try to very actively monitor, and we are in continuous negotiations with Treasury. So when there is underfunding in a particular program, and we know the reasons, we know that the reasons are valid, we try to see if we can then try to get some of those funds shifted to a program where it is required. So there is that active interaction with Treasury with regard to that. We also would ask for rollovers, for example, if we know that those funds are not going to be spent. We will be able to give you reasons as to why there has been underspending as reported by the provinces. From the national side, we are actively trying to make sure that there's appropriate spending within the provinces. We monitor on a quarterly basis. If the monies are not going to be spent, I will write to the provinces and say, and we've just done that sort of recently, to say that we've seen this underspending within your program, and if you don't give valid reasons or don't take corrective action, then we will withhold the funds and not transfer further funds to them. So we do that. Now, we also need to understand that there's both Schedule 4 and Schedule 5 transfers. And in Schedule 4, those transfers will happen automatically. It's only in Schedule 5 that we have the ability to withhold funds if they're not spending appropriately. So we are doing that. Very definitely, if there's underspending at the national level, we've given you the reasons as to why there's been underspending at the national level, and we would also accept responsibility that if you thought there's been inefficiency with regard to that underspending, and that shouldn't have happened, then we would accept that from the portfolio committee. But we've given you reasons for the underspending at the national level with regard to capital expenditure, for example, because it's out of our hands. We haven't been able to move to Civitas, and therefore those funds haven't been spent. But again, our undertaking is to ensure, as the department, that if we've got fiscal responsibility for that expenditure, then we must take that responsibility and ensure that the funds are appropriately spent, that there isn't the underspending, and at the same time, we also know that overspending is just as bad as underspending, and that we just need to have that fiscal oversight and discipline. To make sure that those funds are spent appropriately. Thanks, Chair. I'll let the others answer the questions that they know they should be answering, and then I'll take the rest. They'll just have to come in each one. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I will deal with each question data related questions that we have. Of course, I have to acknowledge that there's a lot of crossover, with some of the areas. I think the first one I'd like to comment on relates to the morbidity and mortality rate, which we reported that there was 50% less than the 70% in Norway target. The causes for that are many, but the major one that I want to raise is relating to clinical governance. You think for those meetings to be effective, you need senior professionals that are well experienced. Yes. Now, over the years, and it did not start only during the 2008-2009 period, over many years, there's been a steady decline of experienced professionals within the public service. And the fewer you have people, the less of them have come out of the meetings, because they have to be in the government. An example is that if there are 10 doctors in a hospital and you remain with two, it's going to be quite difficult. Now, part of the strategies that we put in place, like the OSD one, was to try and attract people, so that you can be able to retain and attract people back into service. I just thought that let me give that small this is a serious problem which is not limited to us in South Africa. In fact, across the health profession, there is underproduction. Now, there are several reasons for that, but maybe I'll focus more on what it is that we're doing to try and capture that. We are currently reviewing the health workforce and planning framework, and one of the directions we have is with the educational institution and the Department of Education and Treasury, because having a plan does not mean that you are going to have to review. One of the serious challenges that is experienced by our education institution is, you know, with the squeeze of funding for institutions, the cage is not getting any bigger, and also the loss of teachers within, you know, with that setting. So what is happening is engaging coming to the institution to try and address that particular issue. But I think far much more on the deployment side, employment is, you know, improving the, especially the remuneration dispensation, but we are fully aware that salaries alone are not going to solve the problem. Temporarily, yes, they will do so, but over a long period of time, there are other issues that have to be addressed. Which is why, if you look at the OSD package, we're not looking only at salaries, we're looking at issues of career progression, pay progression, looking at performance management, and so on, because those are the issues that are interesting to retain those professionals within the public service. And also, I think, of importance is the referral system, between the level of care. The utilization of some of the pharmacists, to my knowledge, those pharmacists are being utilized appropriately. But the question is whether they're able to do business to, a compare centers, and so on. Which is also related to the workload. Because the bigger the workload they have, the less, opportunities they're going to have to travel. And in terms of the mid-level worker policy, we've been in discussion with the South African Pharmacy Council around the training of pharmacy assistants and all that, and that is continuing. And that intervention, we're actually saying that it is bringing a good result already, because in some hospitals, for instance, community centers, where there was none, you do get, a pharmacy assistant that has to be supervised then by a pharmacist, because that is a condition of registration with the pharmacy company. Unfortunately, I do not have the vacancy, the exact vacancy rate, for 2009-8 for pharmacists, but we can be able to provide that. We are hoping that with the implementation, of the new infrastructure, we will be able to get, pharmacists there. One of the strategies that we've devised is to, what we're still in discussion, is to try and limit pharmacy internship to the public sector. At the present moment, they can do internship even in the private sector, and those that go there have to come back to the public sector. But like any of the others that have to do internship in the public sector, that is one area that we're trying to correct. There was a question around the OSP for professional nurses, those that attend program coordinators. You see, the agreement that the public at the bargaining council was that for category to be eligible to the new generation structure, the qualifications must be those that are registered with the statutory council, which means that if you hold your qualification in nursing, it must be registered with the South African Nursing Council. Now, programs are not necessarily run by people with qualification in that program. For instance, if you look at the termination of pregnancy, there is no qualification specifically for that, but what happens is that we utilize, people from with midwifery, to be able to participate. So the agreement that the bargaining council was based on that. However, at the reporting period we're talking about, that area has been resolved. It was resolved about a month ago, because we've been in discussion with labor unions, at the bargaining council to try and address the basically what has been happening before is to say that if people are in general remoteness, you translate them according to that, and then you deploy them, you know, in the, you will then deploy them in the appropriate program, APM, PCP, or CTOP, and so on. Now, I think the reason for delay in implementation of OSD for the question that was asked, what went wrong with the OSD for doctors? I think what reported, I mean, previously to this committee, that when the strike for doctors took place, it's not that nothing was happening. We're actually in negotiations with the doctors. But of course, I mean, people felt that there was a huge delay on that. And part of the delay was relating to finances. If I were to just give you know some information is that currently the year of implementation for doctors and the summer is costing us about $2 to $1.2 billion. But at that time treasury had only given us $500 million. And it was just impossible that you could have significant increases in the salaries of those professionals in $500 million. For instance, doctors alone were costing us about $7.5 million, which meant then that you are running a deficit of $200 million and then you are not having pharmacy that everybody needs. Anyway, through the intervention of the Minister Mosaledi, there's been a significant increase in our allocation. Then, increasing our own capacity of medical schools. Well, we've had discussions with the Dean of Medical School, College of Medicine, and so on, and basically there is work that they are doing to try and put a proposal for the increase in the number of medical schools. However, this has to be based on certain figures. It's not only the question of students, it's not only the question of students, there is no shortage of students who want to do medicine. There's no shortage of students who want to do nursing, but one of the areas where we've got shortage on is the ability to teach those doctors. And I think nursing has been hard hit. You look at the medical schools, I mean, the university medical school here, they've actually lost a significant number of teaching staff over a number of years. Now, these medical schools have to adhere to accreditation criteria of the council, which means there's got to be a ratio of teachers to students. So these are the issues that have to be looked at. But at the end of the day, these have to be financed. And I know there was an issue that was raised about the private medical school. That's an issue that is being looked at with the Department of Education, because we need to remember that the mandate for higher education is with the Department of Higher Education. So once all that work coming in has been done, together with the academic, it would, I mean, discussed. There is a committee on the review of health sciences training, education training, which was set up by the previous Minister of Education, and that committee is ongoing, is actually looking at that way. And we've got a number of academics, Professor McBride in that committee, Professor William Mahoga from the University of South Madras in that committee. So that is where we're discussing that in the organization. In terms of the nursing college project, firstly, let me say that the project was supposed to have commenced last year. If you look at the under expenditure in each act that was reported, it's 10.8 million. And 10 million of that money was actually the tender for that project. And that tender had to be cancelled and re-advertised because we discovered among the shortlisted companies that, I mean, there was some challenge. I mean, it was one of the many best things that, I mean, the legal opinion that we got was to come and reissue the tender. The work has started, the field and the researchers are actually on the ground now visiting all the colleges. We got a steering committee comprised of people from the nursing colleges that I chair. We've had a few meetings already, and it has been said that by the end of March, that project will be completed, And basically, in terms of the transfer of treasure, with that project is to then develop business plans for revamping colleges in those areas where there is education that they need for a new college and a business plan, so that then treasure can get to look at those business plans and devise a plan to fund those, which would be possibly in the next in the following financial year, 11-12. In terms of emergency care training, the number of provinces that are on board now is the KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, Northwest, Free State, and we just had discussions with the Western Cape to address some of the challenges that is happening, and also the Western Cape. So, and basically what is happening is that that's in line with the revised communication in emergency care. The two-man training, the exams that are held here. You see, before the students, I mean, some of our rule are South Africans, it's not tutors. The South Africans who get sent to choose out of training. Before they would qualify in Cuba and come back and work here. Now, in the review of the program, one of the, proposals from the students themselves, the service people here in academic one to say, let them do 5 years in Cuba and then come back and spend a year in South Africa so that they could acclimatize to the South African condition. Most universities run a 1.5 year program, 18-month program. So those students that they write exit exams. But the challenge that we had was that which exam do they write? Who gives them certificate? Is it UCT because they've got 6 students that are doing that orientation, I mean that are doing that final year here, or is it the university in Cuba? So the arrangement that was agreed to was that in terms of the role of our university, those students are not students of UCT. That is the way the rules are, you know. So because we can't have somebody who comes in the last year of medical training and then so they get to the certificate that they have got their children, I mean universities where they train. But the final training and assessment is done by our own together with the academic from Cuba. And we actually found that that was the coming out of people. In terms of foreign locals learning local languages where they are based, this is a challenge. We've got our own South African doctors. I can't speak even a single of the indigenous language. Yes, sure, yes, yes, yes. And I know that medical schools are trying to bridge that up. I know that this, you know, has been for you, you know, language, you know, but basically what we do is that those that get recruited on government to government and before they come here, one of the things that is checked is the language proficiency, you know, in English, so that they can be able to communicate with our nurses, you know, who then do the interpretation, and of course, I think it is, I mean, a challenge, you know, in many senses. I think even with our own, you know, people that will go for internship in Limpopo, who trade, you know, as a KZN or whatever, to have to go there and try and learn, you know, so that they can be able to communicate. So I think it's something that we will take as, you know, a suggestion. Then we can see how that. There was an issue about, you know, the question of, you know, the technical skills. I know there is a technical skill. One of the challenges with public service has been to attract highly technical skills and retainers. Across the sector, health is not the only one. And I think it's an issue that from the government and administration and the BFC is being looked at, which is why the public service why it's important to look at the skills and competencies that people have, so that at the end of the day, it is, you know, a mechanism to address that. Just the last few, the placement of computer service professionals. Computer service, basically what we do is that provinces identify facilities where computer vision can be done. And then the individual, the young professional, can plan according to their choice. And if the system is being, we coordinate at the national level, but we've got provincial coordinators that sit there together with representative associations and the most in the professional. And then people get placed, for instance, they'll be given they'll have five choices, they get placed. If you don't get in the first round, then in the second round. The problem that we have in many instances is that those that are trained in Gauteng and Western Cape don't want to lose those programs, which becomes a problem, because it then means that if you did not train in the, especially medicine, that is the biggest problem. It means that if you didn't train in Stellenbosch or, you know, Victoria, then you would not, I mean, so in some instances it leads to a lot of dissatisfaction, but what you try to do is to be introduce as much equity as possible. Some people end up with choices that they did not make, others end up with choices that they make. So far, that is the best system that we can put in place. Otherwise, it would have quite some serious problems and divisions between the professionals. And then there's an institute which is far much more equitable, you know, to put it in line. The last one is where the is the question of the distribution of the students that are trained in Cuba. Once they finish their training and are certified to have, passed, they do their internship, which they can go anywhere in the country in those institutions. But when it comes to computer service, the majority of them, I'll say about 95% of them, go back to the provinces that sponsor them to go to that. And then we get to see we currently have, more than 200 of the, just a little bit more than 200 of the students that train in Cuba that are back in the country. We've got bigger numbers also, that are in Cuba. I think that's the point. There's been a better example.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I will respond to the qualification areas. And Dr. Chetty has already responded to the underfunding and the under expenditure. And the DORA and the management of Division of Revenue Act. So the specific question was, what was the reason for not reconciling for revenue management under MCC as well as for the transport and transportation. Lastly, the first issue was lack of road classification. One unit thought the other unit was doing it, specifically on the reconciliation of MCC. So, hence the action plan is in place to plan the responsibility to a person and also to assist in giving them the action step by step what it is that needs to be done. Secondly, specifically on the revenue management, we have also improved the guidelines that we are giving to the industry, to the applicants, so that they know that when they do EFT, direct deposits to the bank, because that was the main problem. We couldn't reconcile that with the revenue we have received. So that when they do the direct deposits, there's a reference and a proper breakdown what that deposit is for. Is it for a new application or a new one or annual registration? So those things have now been covered, and the other problem was that the prompt deposit or transfer back to the PNP account of the revenue we are receiving at the department. So all that has been covered, and now we are monitoring it on a monthly basis. The second qualification area was on the subsistence and transfer allowance, but it was mainly related to the company we are utilizing to transport officials around. And this contract is from the Department of Public Works for transport, and we are participating in the contract. So the problem also there was the reconciliation. It is done by the Department of Transport or by us as the case department. So those books have been classified, and we are monitoring the bill now, and maybe also to indicate that since we started reconciliation, internally the vision for you was done. So those are the questions that are, I think, related to the qualification area. And maybe finally to indicate that yes, we have been specific qualified for the people from prior years, and we are confirming, confirming that the previous qualification areas have been dealt with satisfactorily with the auditors as well. With respect, with the exception of the management of the business, because we are still so dependent on the cooperation we get from the provinces, but that has also improved. Hence, it's not a qualification now. It is other methods, but we are still working hard with the provinces and the auditor general to try and make sure that it gets out of the auditor's cost. Thank you.
Can we ask Tsunami to respond to the 15-year review?
So, Honourable Chair, the Honourable Member, just have two questions. One of the 15-year review of the performance that have been done, the other one is about the promises that have to have the incident management system. The 15-year review of the performance of the health sector was commissioned by the Department of Health last year. And then there was a second one that was initiated by the Development Bank of South Africa, which we also participated in. The first thing to say is that this review opened to go far beyond the 2008-2009 financial year, which we are looking at. And it looked at issues that happened since 1994. Indeed, as Dr. Gray stated in his presentation, that the amount of identified some gaps in management and leadership. When you look at the illustrations or examples that are given in that report, the TBSA one, as well as the one commissioned by ourselves, to illustrate the lack of leadership in the sector, over and over again, the example used is that of the management of the HIV and AIDS issues in the country, which I think we all familiar with. The concern raised that there was a delayed response to the epidemic, which if we had commenced with the interventions that we have now, impact in terms of morbidity and mortality could have been far less than what it is now. But as soon as the conference is planned, it was a place going to greater details about that. The second issue that is raised is that the health outcomes in South Africa are not commensurate with the resources that are spent in South Africa. And again, there's a number of things which HIV and AIDS comes into play, the issue raised by the mortality also comes into play. But these days, they don't know the studies of what HIV to some of the challenges that we have faced in the sector. And if you look at the new 10-point plan, the first priority the provision of strategic leadership and creation of a social compact for better health outcomes. And that priority is to identify, to address some of the concerns that we picked up in the studies that we conducted. Related to this issue is that of the district health system and primary health care vision that there is in the world. What the 2015-year review found was that out in 1994-95, after 1997, with a very powerful and useful concept of what we call a white paper for the transformation of the health system, which clearly outlined how the health service delivery platform is kind of supposed to present through primary health care. But the review also found that over time, you know, you had 9 different variations of the implementation of the DHIS in the province. So if you have a district manager in one province being at level 14, this is a chief director. And in another district, you have a district manager being at 11, which is the deputy director. And those types of things affect the authority of the particular district manager and the district management team to develop their own plan, implement their own plan, monitor their own plan, and support, and also to be held accountable or what happens at the district level. So in April 2008, the health sector convened at the Beijing Conference Center to commemorate this year's primary appearance in Al-Ma'asid tradition. And the current course recommitted itself to the vision of primary appearance and the vision of the station. Following them, there was a conference with Bukina Faso in Ouagadougou, in which the continent itself recommitted itself to primary care and to the values of the education system. And as we are receiving plans from districts and from provinces, we are looking to see that these concerns that are addressed and this new vision that has been set is really being reflected in those particular places of districts and provinces. So that if a 20-year-old or 30-year review is conducted on the health system, we don't find ourselves in the same situation, in the same findings that in 2008 were found. The last information on this issue is that we are still funding from pressure to conduct an audit of primary health care services and infrastructure. So that throughout the country we have said, per district, per facility, what are the particular constraints that have been faced in terms of implementing the primary health care package and the primary health care approach broadly, and based on that, come up with a consolidated plan, and maybe we should also do the basic treasure where necessary. Some countries are not going to require money, but those that require additional resources so that we come up with a comprehensive response for addressing those issues. Now, the four policies that started introducing the adverse incident management in A, the first thing, the Northwest, Eastern Cape, and Bangladesh.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I received from yesterday the latest report from Stats South Africa on the 2007 mortality figures based on the analysis of death certificates. Now, I can show it on the screen, Honorable Chair, but just, I don't know if I should or just speak to you. There's some good news in this report. It might be worth 38 But if you look at this, and if you look at the number of deaths that are that's been reported between 1997 and 2007, a 10-year period, you will see that it increases very sharply from 317,000 in 1997 to 612,000 in 2006. But if you look at 2007, the numbers are starting to drop. Now, it's probably too early to ascribe any causality to it, any reason for why the drop has occurred. It might be a statistical problem, it might be a data problem, or it might be real. Now, of course, from the Department of Health, we hope it's real, that we're seeing a decrease in the number of deaths, and we hope that it's at least in part being contributed to by the services provided by the Department of Health, including but not only the HIV program. It'll be interesting to study this report. It was released on the 2nd of November. It's a review of all deaths that occurred in 2007 relative to 2006. And they've done for something, review back to 10 years back. Another quick slide is this one, which is very worrying. I'm not sure if the Honorable Members can see it, but the bottom yellow bits are the natural causes of death, and the upper orangey bits are the non-natural causes, which are deaths from gunshots, stabbing, interpersonal violence, suicide, motor vehicle accidents, etc. And what's concerning about this is where those deaths seem to be most significant. The 15 to 19, 20, 24-year-olds, those seem to be at higher risk for non-natural causes of death than older people. But it starts fairly young, from 5, 9, 2 to 20, 24. So in terms of the prevention approach, Honorable Dr. Mithuli, you know, that's really the kind of, from the non-natural causes of death, those are the kinds of things you need to focus on. Now here's a very curious slide. It ranks the top 10 causes of natural causes of death by classification, ICD classification. And you can see that the most common death recorded in the death certificate is TB, which is ranked number one for both 2006 and 2007. And it's about 12-13% of all deaths are related to TB. The second are influenza and pneumonia. And the third are your intestinal infectious diseases, which are really largely gastro and diarrhea, which affect young children. So I think it's actually very useful for me to start interrogating this data a little bit more to see what it says about health services and the impact of health services, what it says about the pattern of the burden of disease, and because they also disaggregated by male, female, provinces, and also age groups. So I think it's very instructive to look at this, and maybe you know we can really need to interrogate it a bit further. Coming to the major issues, Honourable Chair, and I'll deal with it in terms of the various categories, and I'll start with maternal and child health. And there were a number of questions around maternal and child health, starting with immunization coverage. Now, clearly, we have to have a 90% immunization coverage nationally, fully immunized under one. We have a number of districts with 80% or less, and those are the districts we are trying to target with our reach every district strategy. And what does that reach every district strategy mean? It means some very practical things. The first thing it means is that all primary healthcare facilities must provide immunization every day, all day. Now, we have facilities in the country that don't provide it every day. We have facilities that provide it half day, and we have facilities that don't provide it where the facility is open on a Saturday, don't provide it on a Saturday. The second, it means that there should be no missed opportunities for any child who presents in a hospital. If the child is not being immunized, and if the health workers of the hospital are attending to the child should be immunized at hospital level. And we know that that doesn't happen in all hospitals. So the feeling is that there's a primary health care matter, and therefore should be referred to a primary health care level. So those are the two things we need to do. The third thing we need to do is health workers must review road to health charts, you know, where the immunization status of the child is recorded. And that doesn't happen routinely. Now, we are trying through the IMCI program, the basket of services that children should get when they attend a facility, trying to get all at least one health worker at the facility that sees children trained in IMCI, Integrated Management of Child and Youth. Going back into the community, we want to saturate all communities with the household and community component of IMCI, which should largely be done by community health workers. Now again, there's a series of challenges around organizing our community health worker cadre, of which I think we have at least 60,000 in the country, to provide at least a core set of services to every community that they serve. So some of these issues that relate to health service delivery also are impacted upon by what is done or not done at homes and families. Now, personally, I think it's a pity that we don't require all children to be fully immunized before they're accepted to school, because that might put a little bit more pressure on parents to get their kids immunized. But that also means that health services must be provided to especially vulnerable and marginalized communities so that they can get easy access to immunization services. So there needs to be a good mix and fit between the supply side, which is the health service, and the demand side, which is the community and family. We know also, for example, that many mobile clinics, do not offer immunization services because they don't have fridges, for example, to keep the vaccines, the cold chain. So those are the kinds of missed opportunities that we've recognized and we are trying to fix. As you can see, it's a big problem. It's not just about getting the vaccine. It's about having a system that can deliver the vaccine. We also have, of course, a number of imported cases with respect to people coming into the country who are not fully immunized. That increases our pool of susceptibles. And the current outbreak in Gauteng, despite a few other provinces, seems to arise out of a growing pool of susceptibles, especially amongst the 15 to 19 year olds. And the reason for these susceptibles is that when we have these waves of campaigns, we are not reaching all of the kids even during the campaign. So we need to have a mix of routine immunization plus campaigns, national campaigns, every 3 to 4 years to ensure that the pool of susceptibles is low and herd immunity is high. That is, you know, everybody is immune against these vaccine-preventable diseases. So there are a number of strategies that we must, and we are in the process of strengthening to improve our immunization coverage. We are planning to have a national immunization coverage campaign for polio and measles starting the 15th of April next year, going through the 15th of May, to come in line with the WHO recommendation that we have these every 3 to 4 years. Currently, as we speak, there's a team of people from the WHO, together with the national departments and provincial departments, doing a review of our surveillance of our EPI program. The way in which cases are found, cases are treated, and cases are reported. And they are hoping to finish their review by Friday. So we'll know early next week what they found and what some of their key recommendations are to fix up, to strengthen our surveillance system. The other causes of death are reported in the interim annual report of the Ministerial Committee on Perinatal Mortality, which is being chaired by Professor Sembiso Velapi from Barrow. And together with the under-5 committee that looks at under-5 mortality, which is led by Dr. Neil McCarroll from KZN, they found that the major causes of perinatal, infant, and under-5 mortality are what we would all expect and what we all know. HIV is a significant contributor to mortality in that age group. Second is diarrhea. Third is pneumonia and gastro. Right? Then there's malnutrition as number 5. So those are the major causes of death of children under 5. We are looking at what needs to be done about each of these. So for HIV, for example, we are ramping up our prevention of mother-to-child transmission program, our vertical transmission program, in a number of ways. And you will see we've got some evidence already of the impact of our accelerated PMTCT program, where in the districts, in the 6 districts that we have an accelerated plan, and the number of HIV-positive children born under this program has decreased significantly from 10% to around 5 or 6%, which is similar to now what happened in this province over a long period of time, where the prevalence, the transmission rate in this province from mother-to-child transmission is now under 5%. So that's something we know we must do and we must ramp up. The second thing is around gastro and diarrhea and malnutrition. We need to do all the things that relate to primary health care. And the Honorable Dr. Lutuli is absolutely right that we must strengthen our primary health care system. But using the primary health care approach, which means community participation, intersectoral collaboration, ensuring clean water and sanitation, etc., etc. And that's where the importance of linking district health plans with the integrated development plans of municipalities are critical. And as you can see, not all of our district health plans have a visible link with the IDPs as yet. There is a challenge also in the management of sick children, especially in our district hospitals. For example, there are 10 steps for the treatment of severe malnutrition that the WHO recommends, and not all district hospitals are using the 10 steps. We now are looking at how to create SOPs, you know, these very, very easy to use guidelines at ward level. So for example, if a ward admits severe malnourished children, the kitchen must be open all night to provide the child with food throughout the night. It's a simple thing that relates to clinical management and the way in which the hospital functions. On the maternal mortality side, the confidential inquiries into maternal mortality report covers the period 2005 to 2007. There's always a 2-year lag. The reports before that cover the period 2002 to 2004. Now, one of the things that the current report found was that the 10 causes of mortality are, bar one, the same as that they reported for the period 2002-2004. And the only exception is the treatment of hypertension in pregnant women. What else did the report? Which means that we've not intervened vigorously enough after the 2002-2004 report was made available. What we have done now is that we have come up with an integrated implementation plan with a request from the Minister for all provinces to develop action plans that are specific to facilities. See, if we have a general national plan, that's useful. But that needs to be translated, I think, as one of the honourable members said, to something that's implementable and something you can measure. It's not a matter of just providing protocols or guidelines. It's a matter of providing support to the facility where those avoidable deaths are occurring. So that's really what we're trying to do. Trying to put together teams of, and this is the proposal that we have that we've not yet actioned, but the proposal is to have teams of retired obstetrician gynecologists, anaesthetists where they are required, and retired midwives to go and observe what's happening in the labor ward and to ensure good practices like use of partograms and whatnot. So that's the kind of hand-holding or oversight we are proposing, Honourable Chair, rather than just giving protocols and guidelines again, because we've done that, as Honourable Members said many times. It's a matter of close supervision and close support and management at the facility level. On the other issue is, of course, to strengthen the availability of blood at all facilities that do cesarean sections. There are also challenges in transport. There are many obstetric emergencies that can be dealt with by getting mothers either who have difficult pregnancies admitted earlier on so that they are already in a facility in case there's an obstetric emergency. There's also the issue of dealing with obstetric emergencies, and together with academic gynecologists and obstetricians, we've created a training program on emergency and obstetric care, and they will start fairly soon doing training of midwives and doctors that are doing deliveries, especially the district hospitals, because that seems to be the weak point in the system. So moving on from maternal and child, I mean, I can talk a lot about maternal and child health, as you can gather, but I don't think we've got the time for this. There are lots of stuff. On TB, as you can see, TB is the major cause of mortality. 1% of South Africans each year get infected with TB. Now, I think this is not a new problem. We've had TB for centuries. We've had drugs for decades. The one challenge is we don't have any new drugs for TB control. The second challenge, of course, is to ensure that infection control is effective. And Honourable Member asked about the infection control manual. Honourable Member, what we've done is not only to produce the manual, but we are working with facilities to improve infection control. So in the Graaf-Reinet area, for example, they've done a number of things in the 30-odd facilities in that district to improve infection control, including simple things like ensuring that health managers of health facilities keep windows open, because that's one sure way of ensuring infection control. The other is washing hands, the other is cough hygiene, the other is having cough registers and looking at your suspects who are in the waiting room. See, we know all of these things, and the things that I'm now suggesting needs to be done are not new things. We just need to ensure that they are done, and done systematically, and somebody is held accountable to ensure that it gets done. Now, it's impossible for me, unfortunately, sitting in the National Department, to ensure that the Google Echo Clinic or the Kailisa CHC, or the Mahatma Gandhi Hospital does infection control, even with the best monitoring system. The best way of doing it is to hold the facility manager accountable for ensuring that it gets done. In that respect, and I'm sure Dr. Chetty will speak about it, the minister is going to be inviting all hospital managers and clinical managers to a meeting, and I'll ask Dr. Chetty to speak about what the minister intends in that regard. But we have a strategic plan for TB control, including a plan for MDR and XDR TB, which we are implementing. The good news, of course, is that the default rate is going down from 10% to 7%. The big challenge is to get the cure rate up. With respect to HIV, as I said, we have on the treatment side, we have at the moment more than 800,000 patients. The number that was there was for April. We are putting on treatment far more patients each quarter than we had envisaged in our business plan that we drew at the beginning of the financial year. So the Free State, for example, Honourable Walters, put on in the first quarter, intended to put on 3,000 patients on treatment. At the end of the quarter, they put 4,200 patients on treatment. The second quarter, we've seen almost in every province a significant increase beyond that which they estimated they will have. So predicting demand has become a bit of a hazardous business, and therefore planning and providing the resources has become quite difficult because the uptake has accelerated. Clearly, as we change the treatment guidelines, the scale would just kind of go logarithmically up. So to give you one example, at the moment we have 60,000 HIV positive patients on heart, pregnant women on heart, initiated on heart. If we treat every HIV positive pregnant woman on heart, we will move from 60 to 300,000. We have about 1 million deliveries each year, and of those about 30% are positive, so that's 300,000. Right? So if we've got 60,000 on treatment, it means putting another 240,000 on treatment, 240,000 each year on treatment. So you can see the scale of the challenge we have with respect to treatment. Of course, that doesn't mean we mustn't treat everyone. What that does mean, though, is we must turn off the tap on the prevention side. And that's really a critical thing. Now, we've done a review of the data. What evidence is there for what works on the prevention side? We know condoms work, male and female condoms. We know that PMPCT works, prevention of mother-to-child transmission. We know that male circumcision works, medical male circumcision, right, in terms of the clinical trial evidence. The controversy is not substantive. We'll put that aside for now, in terms of the linkages with traditional circumcision and initiation. So we know a few things. We know STI management works. So we know a few things about what works. We don't have a lot of evidence on what works on the other behavioral issues, and the social mobilization, and the lifestyle issues, including the life skills program in school. So we are currently looking at what do we focus on. Do we focus on what where we have evidence that something works? But what do we do about the life skills program? I mean, I don't think anybody will suggest that we need to decrease the amount of effort we're putting into life skills. But the evidence internationally on life skills program is not good. On the teenage pregnancy side, we know from the recent review report that the Department of Education, the HSRC, came out with, that school dropout is a major predictor of two things. You are twice as likely to get pregnant if you drop out of school, and you are four times as likely to become HIV positive if you drop out of school. So schools are very protective. So we need to ensure that our children remain in school for as long as possible. Because we hope that remaining in school also means that they learn and get better educated and all that stuff. But they are big, dropout is a big predictor of those two things, twice and four times. Is the HIV program sustainable? Honorable Waters, you tell me, with the numbers that I've just suggested. It of course has to be sustained. I don't think we have a choice about it. So, you know, we need to find the resources. And the resources are not just ARVs. The resources are human resources, which Dr. Mashati spoke about. And with respect to human resources, we have to, and which we've started doing down referrals and doing task management or task shifting. So it's nurse re-prescription, nurse initiation with pharmacy assistance are the only way we are going to sustain this program going forward. You can't do it with doctors and pharmacists and professional nurses. We just don't have enough of that. The second big contributor to the budget on the ARV, on the treatment side, is laboratory services, right? For the major tests. CD4, viral load, and the PCR test. Again, major contribution, and then of course the cost of the drug. And we are trying to figure out how to make the program more efficient with respect to decreasing the cost of those three inputs at least. The fourth component, of course, is monitoring the program, knowing exactly how many patients are on treatment, if they are defaulting, why they are defaulting, where they're going to, how many die. We need to keep patients on first-line drugs, the drugs we start them with, because if we move them to the next level of drugs, the cost about doubles. On average, it costs 6,000 rands per patient for the first line drugs per annum. If we move to second line drugs, it increases to 11,000 rands. So it's very important for us to manage the patients clinically well and monitor and get treatment adherence that they maintain themselves on at the first level. With respect to non-communicable diseases, I think some of the data that's in that South Africa report suggests that, firstly, that we have increasing morbidity and mortality from non-communicable diseases, essentially three things: hypertension, cardiovascular diseases, and diabetes, and we have a growing burden of non-natural causes of death, which I think I've shown in that picture. So So health promotion is going to become more and more important, and prevention programs more important. And I guess the issue of obesity is an international phenomenon. It seems to rest on three things: diet, changes in diet, level of inactivity, and other lifestyle issues. And it's largely around sedentary lifestyles and poor diet. Now the Department of Health can do only so much about this. It needs sports and recreation, Department of Education, you know, a whole system needs to work and move in that direction. The WHO has proposed that we have a new strategy called Health in Every Policy. So every policy that government passes needs to have a lens of the health system or health outcomes through which it's viewed. And the country that's done it best, because I just read about it, that's the only reason I know about it, is Sweden. And you know, there might be some lessons from countries like Sweden. There are big differences within our country and Sweden, of course. But I think what we need to do to address both the violence trauma issue and the non-communicable diseases issue is to look at whether or not we have sufficiently considered health in every policy as an approach towards programming for government. Honourable Chair, I can go on forever, but I'm sure you would like me to stop now. I'll hand over to Dr. Chetty.
And you really mean that, Honourable Chair. I think there's a couple of questions, and I'm not sure if we covered all the questions. Really outstanding question. From what I understand, there was an issue around the Office of Standards Compliance and the bill of the budget was adequate. Can I just point out that the budget that was reflected is what has been put in as the initial amount in order to get the Office of Standards Compliance up and running, and it's just mainly for the administrative aspects of running the office. We've also received funds for other programs within the Office of Standards Compliance that won't necessarily get reflected in the in this budget. So we've got, for example, funds in order to set up an integrated national complaint system. We'll be looking at that and I'm not sure the exact amount, but we can easily send that to you. We've also put in a further budget bid now, because the NTF works such that you can put in budget bids and they will change it over the next period in order to look at a lot more staff and to look at people that would be able to go around to the different provinces and have teams in order to assist provinces. So we'd agree that amount is the way it stands right now. We'll need a lot more, but it was okay to start up the office initially. I understand that there's been a question around Aubergine.
Traditional medicine and clinical trials.
It's difficult for me to comment just specifically on Aubergine, but maybe just to say what's the process that we use around traditional medicines. There is a unit that has been set up at the MRC that specifically looks at some of these aspects of trials around traditional medicine. And I wouldn't know as to, what's his name? Okay, but I wouldn't know whether in specific traditional medicine has been, you know, such as the Vajana that has been given through to the unit and how far they would be in the clinical trials, but I'm sure the portfolio committee would be able to call at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and the head of the unit just slipped my mind. Okay, but you can easily get that information through to you. And they have been conducting a lot of clinical trials around traditional medicine in order to ensure the safety and security. Okay, the hospital CEOs, I'm not sure whether there's anything further to say from what Dr. Pillay has said, but there will be a meeting that will be called shortly by the minister around hospital CEOs in addressing a number of issues, particularly some of the issues around health management and the strengthening of the health management and how to improve competencies and skills within the hospitals. And then just maybe just to add on to what Dr. Pillay has said, because he hasn't mentioned it, when you looked at the chart that he put up as to some of the major causes of death, he mentioned the fact that pneumonia and infectious diseases and gastro, one of the biggest killers for children under 5. Just to say we have embarked, when we've already announced that we've added 2 new vaccines into our expanded program of immunization. One is the Prevnar, which is for pneumococcal, it's a pneumococcal conjugated vaccine, and the other is Rotarix, which is used for rotavirus, which causes about a third of all childhood diarrhea. And that's going to have a major impact on some of those childhood illnesses. And just to say, I think we're the only country in the world that has introduced, especially for pneumococcal disease, introduced a vaccine. And that's in the public sector. It's available in the private sector. And we're setting an example, and it's been acknowledged internationally. And Prevnar in particular also has positive impacts on disabilities, such as pneumococcal ear infections. You often get meningitis, stomach as well. So it will have all those knock-on effects. So it will affect not only mortality, but at least the mobility and quality of life of individuals.
Thank you very much, Brother. I think we need to have a second round. We should one. Can we agree that we
it's big for me.
Okay.
We're presenting to the select committee next week.
Tuesday.
So when we're meeting in the MSP, probably we could accommodate them next week. I'm not sure whether you doesn't look ready. I know that maybe we could play for me in next week. So what would be the solution?
Chair, is there any possibility that after we meet in the select committee, then you could meet with the portfolio committee on Tuesday? Because Wednesday is it's a bit difficult with council meetings and
yeah,
I mean, but we can make an opportunity, but I'm just making a suggestion. That's fine. You'll make a plan.
So we can set up one day as well. But remember the question before we ask the question. So are we agreeing in the conversation that we are having that you need them on the next week or next
week? So, can I also make one request that if there are program managers that are not available, if we can be given the opportunity of then finding the next most senior person there, just in case there's not available.
I don't think we'll have very hard next year.
Okay, thank you.
We've got from now to the next week. Maybe we should say to members here to put the questions in writing that they need to come to, so that the questions are given to them, so that to such extent we have the amount of questions and they know whom they can need to bring. If somebody cannot come, they can just use a response for that. And then, of course, we'll have follow-up questions here, but I'm just saying that that will be the only person that then we can manage the process.
Okay, I'm not
sure
if you want to follow up on this discussion?
Yes.
Successfully immunized against a particular
Now, we have made and have an expansion now. You know, almost incredible. The figures are incredible. Do you think that could be affecting the, you know, this 90% safety figure for, you know, for all of us?
So the point of order.
My first question
of
all, when you said
normal,
I thought
speaking
about that
this thing was
next week. Otherwise, I think
it's not one. You said, you know, I have instructed that it was still not on. I don't want to expect that. I'm saying, we have not finished this. So, you have 15 complaints about your business. So, okay, Thank you.
The other thing is that there is an implication that is of a few members of the community that are going to go to the east and the west in the places where they are practicing any time. So they want us to choose people that are going to the east, so that are going to go there. So we decide, I'm going to be talking to them. They must come and address us and tell us what are they looking for. That is that. They're going to say everything, but I think about 4 members that they're looking for, but we decided to go to the so that those are just the announcements. Thank you very much, Evangeline. Thank you very much, members. Even those that I didn't know who are they, thank you very much. We know them. Thank you very much. I think the meeting is over. We'll talk to you later.
I was trying to get a copy of that excellent document on statistics. Oh, is it on the health website? Oh, so you were using that. Oh, that's the new one. Good. No, excellent. I suddenly thought it was something new that had last come out. Oh, well done. Good. I am caught up. I'm sorry, I'm seven.
But we had
did I have 2 Dr. Pillays, or was I going?
No, I'm Dr. Pillays.
You are up on the website for your details.
Yes, I thought it, and I was going to show you the news. Yes.
Yeah, I present all the time. So.
Don't you talk to me? Kevin, you.